It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
We are here in the studio today together on this absolutely glorious, cool, but perfectly clear Northeast Florida day. I could take this for a long time.
Yeah, it's springing the blues at the beach this weekend. And man, you couldn't have asked for a better weather weekend to have this.
Excellent. Well, good for us, I say. We're getting more and more known, and you can tell it. Just go out to A1A any time of the day and try to get on and off somewhere. Unfortunately, our little secret has been discovered.
There is no doubt about it. We're seeing it in the traffic. We're seeing it in the office with the amount of out-of-state people coming in. It's you know, you can paint it as good or bad. It just depends on how you look at it.
And it is not the most inexpensive place to live anymore.
Not anymore.
It's really gone up. In fact, I want to do a little talking about that over the next couple of days, because the insurance market has become a bona fide problem for Florida.
The insurance market, and also I want to talk about Duval County shooting themselves in the foot with taxes.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, property I know exactly taxes. What you're referring
you do.
To.
You
it
do.
Was an office incident. I always love it when real life comes into the radio show. I bet you're going to get some people after the show who look and find out the ugly truth.
They're going to be surprised.
Yep. Well, we'll keep that one in abeyance for a little while, so you can't miss anything today. Just make sure you stay tuned. Meanwhile, this week, first off, I should welcome everybody back. All the regulars, you know, we depend on you week after week, and we hope you're having a good time, as we are. From the looks of our business growth lately, we're hitting home somewhere because things have been pretty good. And the market has largely been helping us all also. And that was taking a little breather earlier this week. And thankfully, Friday kind of got us out of the four-day funk. So it didn't wind up feeling as bad as it would have otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. It was a bit of a ugly week, especially going into Friday, and you weren't really sure how Friday was going to turn out either, with the jobs report coming out, and then even when it came out, what the reaction might be. You just never know. Fortunately, this time the reaction was positive. We saw a 300-point gain on the Dow Friday, over 300 points, and it wasn't enough to save the week, but it certainly did help out. It could have been really ugly if it had gone the other way. The Dow did see its first 2% pullback of the year, and so we've at least crossed that hurdle, I guess. It was long overdue, to be honest.
I think we predicted that last week.
Perhaps.
Maybe not for this particular week, but for very soon.
Oh, yeah. There's just no way you can see six. We've seen two incredible quarters back-to-back. You just know it's coming. I mean, you can't go on going up every day forever. It's not going to work. The Dow was down 2.3% or 903 points this week. The S&P was down less than half of that due to technology exposure. The loss on the S&P was just 1%, while the tech-heavy NASDAQ was down 0.8. So definitely a big disparity between the three indexes. In any case, not a great start to the second quarter, but with how the market had been so overbought, and this brought it back down by most measures into neutral territory. So that's a much better place to start next week's trading rather than remaining overbought in the indefinite future. One area that didn't have a tough week was energy. That rose 3.9% on the back of rising oil prices. Oil started the week at about $83 per barrel and ended the week over $86. And has been on a three-month tear from $70 per barrel. Just in 3 months, it's gone 70 to 86. So that's a pretty sizable increase. It's being influenced by a lot of factors. That includes production cuts from OPEC, the conflict in Israel and its surrounding areas, and the potential for that to escalate, which seems more and more likely every day. And an increasing travel. Summertime is coming up. And if you haven't been on a flight lately, I can tell you I've been on several, and not one of them has had a free seat. It is insane how busy airports are. I didn't look at the numbers to compare to pre-pandemic, but I have to think that they're right there. It is really, really busy out there. People are on the move. Driving season is coming up. So a lot of this oil price reaction is just due to increase in demand as well. Commodities outside of oil also had a good week. The index rose 3.4%. Natural gas was up for once by 2%. Gold was up 4.6%, and silver was up kind of a shocking 10%. Not bad for a week. Commodities were, commodities were going up. The bond market was going in the other direction. The yield on the 10-year Treasury started the week at 4.2 and ended the week at 4.4. This, of course, did not fare well for bonds. TLT was down by over 3%. That's the long Treasury bond. And AGG was down 1%. That's sort of the aggregate bond market. So not a great week to be in fixed income. International stocks kind of mixed this week. Israel got hit pretty hard. It was down 5.6%. Mexico and India were both up about 1.5% to lead the way higher. Surprisingly, China and Hong Kong saw some gains. Japan, which has kind of been going the opposite of China, it's been going up while China's been going down. It had a 2% loss. European stocks were largely down on the week, and emerging markets were up overall. So kind of a mixed bag overseas. One reason we suspect that market performance may stay on the weaker side for the short term is investor sentiment. It's gotten way too bullish. People are excited about the stock market, and that is never good for the stock market.
Makes me shudder.
Yeah, the current bullish reading is so high that it ranks in the top 1% of all readings for bullishness, and it also happens to coincide with the lowest returns when that happens. Now, that may sound like a terrible thing, but the good news is that those low returns are still positive on average, and they are just lower than when the bullish level is at lower readings. So not a great sign for the immediate future in the stock market. I wouldn't be surprised to see a 1 to 2 month sort of breather on the market before resuming the bull market.
Yeah, as Warren Buffett always says, buy when there's blood in the streets.
Right now there is not.
There is not yet.
So lastly, we need to talk about jobs. The JOLTS report, that's Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, it showed layoffs are still very low. Hiring continues to decline, though. And the quit rate also continues to decline. And all of this points to a much more normal job market than what we have seen over the last few years. Now, if you look at job openings, they're still very high relative to history, but they've come down. They've come way down off their peak of a couple of years ago. So all of that, again, just says, yeah, we're getting back to normal, which is honestly, I'm kind of happy about. It's been a little bit of a crazy job market out there with demand for jobs. It's been an employee market, and now it's the balance of power is shifting back towards the employer. But it hasn't fully gone back, but it's definitely going back to that equilibrium that we're used to. Both the ADP and the government jobs report came in hotter than expected this month. ADP reported 184,000 new jobs, while the Friday government report showed 303,000 new jobs. Both of those numbers beat their estimates by a large margin. I know you have some thoughts on that as well.
Lots of them.
Okay. Might have to address it after the break, though.
That's pretty much a certainty.
Okay.
We will have a trivia question. I'm going to talk about credit scores and that kind of thing today, because there is not a credit market nor a universal financial health number that makes any sense against a lot of things that are going on out there. So we've got to look at that a little bit. We've got to look at the job thing. And there are just so much going on today, I don't think we'll get it all in. So stay tuned. Don't miss anything. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question today brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. I don't know how familiar most people are with credit scores. First off, if you don't know your own, learn it.
And it's really easy to do and free.
Yeah. you were talking the other day in the office, Credit Karma.
Yeah, free. That's
an easy way to go.
It's owned by a very reputable company. It's free. It's easy to get on. And you can see two of your three scores anytime you want to. And they tell you what's affecting them, what's right. making it go up or down. It's a very good website.
And that's extremely important knowledge mm-hmm. because if you are what they call subprime, you're going to pay a lot more to do anything you want to if you can get credit. So I'm just going to give you the brackets at this point. If you've got a score in the 300 to 600 range, you're called subprime. And that's when you really pay. If I pay 5% interest, you're going to pay 8% interest mm-hmm. or something like that. The next one from 601 to 660 is called near prime. And what that means to me is if you're there, try a little harder. Because the next one, which goes from 661 to 780, is prime. That's you want to be in that spot. If you go over 780, it's called super prime. And some of us appreciate that just because it feels good.
Yeah.
Really where you want to be is above 680.
Yes, definitely. But there's nothing bad that can come of it by being over 780.
No, you're gonna get the same rate for things. And a lot of you probably don't know this can affect your car insurance and homeowners insurance too. Mm-hmm. If you're not at least at 680, you better start a plan right now to get there.
Yeah.
At some point. But because of the way the economy has been, not the one that is described on television, but the way the actual one is, in the past 12 months, how many Americans, not by percentage, I want a number, how many Americans have moved down from prime to subprime, prime and near prime down to subprime?
So how many new subprime
people are there in the last 12 months? Remember, this is not good news because those are the people that are going to have trouble doing the things they want to do financially.
Definitely.
All right, should we talk about jobs a little bit?
Let's talk about jobs.
Let's do that. ADP came out on Wednesday, as usual. That's the private employer survey, with a number of 184, which to me, when I saw the number, said, well, that's Goldilocks right there. Not too hot, not too cold. Wouldn't have wanted it over 200, but I don't want it under 100 either. So that looked pretty good. And then on Friday, the BLS releases its surveys, the first one being the establishment survey. That's where they call large employers. They sample them. They've been calling the same people a lot of times, and they mix it up a little bit just so the statistics work. And that came out at 303, and that is not Goldilocks. When people are wanting the Fed to lower rates. That's too hot.
I was a little worried that the market was going to take that negatively on Friday.
And if you looked at the time between 8:30 and 9:30, that's the release of the number and the opening of the market, the futures were going up, down, up, down to zero because the market couldn't quite make a decision on that one. But it wound up being a very good day, as we mentioned before the break. But there's some things in there that are a little worrisome, and some of them, it's easy to point them out. Repeating numbers and statistics and so on is easy. What's really going on out there requires a little bit of analysis. So first off, I looked at the survey that they run of households, where they actually call households, and that showed what was that number I got? Headline 303. 498. Now, 498,000 people working. There were new jobs, but the people working that comes in the columns next to it, you hear us talk about the participation rate of the economy. There are a few million working age, mostly males, I think, in this country who will not go into the workforce.
Yeah.
And it's costing the economy a lot. I can't kick them out of the house. Hopefully their parents will eventually get a job, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and we saw that for years prior to the last couple of years. We were seeing this part of the participation rate was just not dropping when the economy was on fire.
Right.
And that you can't explain that except that those people do not want to work.
Yeah, and the unemployment rate ticked down a little bit to 3.8. Well, what would happen if a couple of million in a month or so people did actually join the workforce? That means they're looking for a job. That means they're counted. That means the unemployment rate goes up substantially. So these numbers are only as meaningful as the understanding you have of how they're derived. And the unemployment rate at 3.8, I know the administration is reaching behind its back and patting themselves on the back for it, but it's 100% artificial considering the participation rate. Just something to point out. The other thing that's going on is there are actually less full-time workers in America today than about a year and a half ago.
That's weird.
That is weird. But there are hundreds of thousands more part-time. So Adam and I were talking on the break about part-timers. There's a lot of people out there who take a part-time job because that's all they can get. But there aren't as many in that boat as there used to be.
Yeah, I agree.
They call it part-time for non-economic reasons. And that number was up 593,000, I think,
yeah,
in the month. So we're speculating that a lot of this is by choice.
I really believe that just based on how the economy has changed over the last 10, 20 years. There are a lot of people doing jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago, like Uber drivers and Shipt mm-hmm. shoppers. And those are all 1099 jobs where they make their own hours.
So far.
Yeah, for now. They make their own hours. They get to choose when to work and not work. And that is much more agreeable with the schedule of a busy parent or a student or just people who don't want to conform to the traditional 9-to-5 normal job.
Mm-hmm. And I am very sympathetic to that thinking because I'm one of those kind of freedom-loving types.
Absolutely.
Even if it means you're going to work two or three different places over the course of a week or so, you're doing it by free choice.
Absolutely. And maybe people find that less tedious than going to the same job every day.
Yeah. And there are early risers and there are people who'd rather do Uber drivers for the bar scene at 1 a.m.
Yeah, definitely.
Everything in between.
And that's a valuable service.
It is. So if we could just get those I'm not going to work people out there, things would get better, but Americans, as always, are very creative with the way they actually go out and do earn a living. So
yeah.
you gotta kind of understand the world has changed quite a bit in the 1099 era.
No doubt.
And California, of course, is trying to just shut them all down completely, make everybody an employee. We've talked about that ad nauseum over the last year or two, and there's just not a lot you can do.
Yeah, but that'll be, if that happens, the companies just to do business.
Well, they threatened that Minneapolis was going to do the same thing to mm-hmm. them. And Uber and, what was the other one? Can't remember. One other one told us, the council in Minneapolis, that if they do it, they're just leaving the state, period.
Yeah, why not?
Overnight. Shut the doors and leave. Well, the last idiot out of Minnesota, please turn out the lights.
That's the con. You know, we get annoyed by bad policy decisions, but when they happen in places like that, you see the repercussions immediately, and you kind of get what you vote for.
Yeah, I've been telling that to people in Minneapolis for a long, long time. My crazy brother, who still lives there, just never know. Anyway, in that arena, California implemented Part 2. And that was in the chain food eateries, I guess you call it. If the company has 60 or more locations in the state of California, they do not have to be owned by the same person. So if you have a franchise McDonald's, for instance, and there are hundreds of them, and you've only got one, it doesn't make any difference. The minimum wage for these people was raised from $16 an hour to $20 an hour. And a couple things took place with lightning speed. For instance, 1,200 people were fired at Pizza Hut. They were the delivery people, which is now subcontracted to probably Uber
Eats, and, yeah, for sure.
So you know, there's always somebody with their hand up standing behind you. But many, many hundreds of others in California got their hours cut. So let's see. If you make X amount and they want you to pay another 25%, maybe your hours get cut 25%?
Would make sense, wouldn't it?
It just somehow seems to occur. And that's without getting into the exceptions for friends of Newsom or anything like that.
Panera Bread.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's stupidity. It has never worked. It will never work. You can legislate all you want, but you can't make people change their behavior. And you can't tell a business to stay in business if they're not making any money. It just doesn't work that way.
Nope.
And I don't know how many times, how many people have to say it before they start understanding. But they are apparently a little bit dense out there on the left coast sometimes. Better here. I shake my head. All right, we'll get on to some much more fun things when we come back from the break. Got to pay a few bills. So don't go away. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. About ready to have fun. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
I had a tooth pulled a couple months ago. Once in a while, there's a catch on it. When that space gets hit, that's what happened. Heck to get old, isn't it?
I guess so.
Remind everybody, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. How many actual Americans have had their credit downgraded to subprime in the last year? And it does make a difference for these people, and it's something you don't want to do. You gotta start taking responsibility for yourself one of these first days, and most of the people we meet have done a pretty good job of that. Otherwise, I guess, why would they be calling us? So who knows? Anyway, we want to get into a little tax situation at Duval. This happened when we had people in the office this week, and a question was asked, and neither of us could answer it, so Adam did a little research, and what did you find?
Well, I found out that Save Our Homes is supposed to cap your tax rate, your tax increase on your house at 3% per year.
Angela was talking about that for those of you who carried over.
And it does, but there's an exception to that. Your taxes can go up by more than that in any given year, which I did not realize had happened in the past year. Just adding to the problems with the insurance going up by 30-40%. And so if you may not have even noticed it, I didn't notice it, but I went back and looked at my year over year tax bill and it actually went up 10%. I couldn't figure out why that was. Well, it turns out there was a ballot initiative during a recent election in which 53% of Duval County homeowners okayed a tax increase on your property taxes. And guess what hit this year? That hit this year. So your millage rate went up. So the increase, if the millage rate had stayed the same, would have been capped at 3%. But with the increase in the millage rate, your taxes probably went up by 10%. So if you live in Duval County, check out your year over year tax bill, and you will see the effect of what happens when you let everyone, not just homeowners, vote on things that affect you directly as a homeowner.
Neil Bortz always used to say that democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner.
Yeah.
Well, when a vast proportion of the voters are not property owners, what do you think's going to happen?
Oh, gee, I wonder.
And it's always done for the children.
But you're also shooting yourself in the foot if you're a renter and doing that, because your rent's going to go up based on
many
that.
Many renters who think they don't pay property taxes paying attention.
They pay it in their rent. That's part of what rent is.
That's exactly right. And you know how high rents have gotten, and they were escalating very, very quickly. Well, that's because costs are going up. The mortgages are higher. The taxes are higher. The insurance is unbelievable. So if you take a look at your own property taxes and see that 10%, then please understand that the law is perfectly good. It's the voters who screwed it up.
Yeah, that was an unpleasant surprise that I received in the office this week.
Yeah. Well, Biden did it again. No, that's kind of a broad category, isn't it? Cut Medicare again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of you know, a year or so ago, there was a negotiation. It was a bill passed, I guess, that allowed Medicare to negotiate drug prices. You have all heard about the $30 max insulin and all that stuff. Well, they did that in several cases, and there's about $400 million that were saved by having the lower drug costs. So was that returned to the people? Was it put back in the trust fund to save the system from impending bankruptcy? Or was it put onto the New Green Deal project? I'll give you one guess.
I'm going to go with the last one.
Very good. Excellent insight. You got nothing. Any of you, none of you in the Medicare age group got anything from this. You got the shaft and you got a lie from the administration. Again, vote better. Well, did it again. This time, Medicare Advantage is being cut. Now, 58% of Medicare beneficiaries in Florida are in Medicare Advantage programs. Some of you might know it as Medicare Part C. What it means is you have a system that is outside of Medicare but works with it. And the benefits, which are also controlled by politicians, by the way, can be more generous in certain counties and certain areas than in others. Well, for some reason, it appears that this administration wants to cut back on that. So they want you to have a lesser plan because I can't finish that sentence, can you?
I cannot
either. No idea. Well, they cut it back, $33 a month or $396 per year per person. And do you think it's going back into the fund or anything? Nope. So if you get a chance, if you run into Senator Rick Scott on the street, thank him. He's leading the charge against this.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I think it's really important that we have people like him who are out there recognizing problems.
Well, he does have a little bit of a background in this area as well.
So. He is qualified. That's the truth. Anyway, this is something that, for some reason, the only time you might hear about any of this stuff is in the late Friday night data dumps that the White House is so notorious for. But this is another $396 right out of your pockets.
Yeah, and if you saw the trading on the healthcare sector this week, may have reflected a bit of that. It was pretty ugly.
I tell you, it's just so beyond comprehension. They say out of one side of their mouth they want to help seniors and all that, and they're turning them into second class citizens. And I'm not so sure that part of that isn't reflected in the trivia question today. How many people have been downgraded in their credit scores to subprime in the last year? And it's quite a few.
Yep. Well, on the flip side of things, did you see that the magic number, the so-called magic number, which is what Americans think they need to retire comfortably, It went up a great deal.
A great deal.
A 15% increase from last year. And it's actually up 53% over the last 5 years, greatly outpacing even the crazy inflation that we've seen in the last 5 years. Yep. That number has gone up to almost $1.5 million. That's what people think they need to retire comfortably. That's up from $951,000 in 2020. What do you think's driving that?
Could it be inflation?
Probably. Has a lot to do with it, yeah. So that's sort of one of those good news, bad news things. The bad news is that people think they need a lot more to retire than they used to. The good news is people think they need a lot more to retire than they used to. It may drive them to be better savers. Will they reach that 1.5 million? The average American is not on target to do that. No. So, but hopefully it's giving them a little added incentive to stash away the money in their 401ks.
Yeah, the only way you can derive a number like this is using statistics. So you add up what everybody thinks and divide by the number to get
right,
an average.
Right.
There's there are probably a lot of people in this country who could retire comfortably on less than that, but it's totally dependent on what forms of lifetime income you have going into retirement.
And your lifestyle. I mean, that's a huge factor.
And for that matter, your geography.
The average American has just $88,400 in retirement savings.
So you're saying they're about $1.4 million short. Huh?
Just shy. It's $1.37 million less than their target.
I'm having trouble finding words again. Today is one of those confounding days where everything just hits you wrong.
This, again, is just one of those statistical things, but that is not really a fair comparison because that 1.5 million is in retirement, and this, the average American, includes people who are 21 years old.
Right.
So you can't really say that that's a fair comparison.
And it's totally dependent on what I call the equivalent net worth. The reason you have retirement money is not to live off the money, it's to live off what the money earns. We teach this in the office all the time. You want X amount of income, you have to have 25 times that to adhere to a 4%, which we believe is a reasonably safe withdrawal rate. So if you're already getting a bunch of money, it's as if you had that money. So military pensions, disability payments, Social Security, those are all cash flow items which give you an equivalent net worth. So the bigger your pensions, and we know some people get some pretty serious pensions.
Yeah, but not any young people.
Not young people. No, they're already getting them. But if you're doing a real retirement planning session with us or on your own or with anybody else, you have to consider your own situation for lifetime income. That's, most of you have been around the show for a while, have heard Stan the Annuity Man a few times. The simple truth is annuities solve a problem. That problem is if you're short some amount on your lifetime income, the annuity is the only thing that's going to put it there. And then all the money you got that didn't have to go there can come over to people like us and manage it with a little higher risk level and a hopefully higher return over time. So there's so much to learn, but when you see these numbers, what's important in these numbers is how high they've gone and how quickly they've gotten there. Imagine if we don't get this inflation rate back under even more control than it is today, because everybody knows it's a lie today. What's going to happen? And it's not going to be pretty. So we're going to take a little break, pay some bills. We'll be right back for one more segment. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a caller on the line. We'll go right there. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Excellent. You?
Hello?
I have a question about a stock, particularly the Google Corporation. If I want to invest in Google, I noticed that there are two issues. I don't know what I can say on the air or not, but
anything you want,
know what
about. As long as it's more than four letters, you're good.
Do I have to buy both of those in order to properly invest in the company, or can I just invest in one or the other?
You can buy either one or both or neither. My first question today would be, I'd look at D maybe, neither. There's some things going on there that are a little dubious, but let's say you really want to. I'd go back and just look at performance of the two. They've been split for a long, long time, and I have not researched this in quite a while, but at the time I did it a few years ago, one had outpaced the other one by quite a bit.
No, I'm pulling it up now, but I think they're pretty close.
Okay. Adam's looking.
Yeah, they're almost identical over the last 3 years, 5 years. No, there's really no.
Okay, so there's no real advantage.
Not really.
Okay.
The one without the L has a 4%. Better performance over 5 years or so.
Negligible.
It is pretty small.
Yeah, and I.
Okay.
I don't know how
so it really doesn't matter. Yeah. All right. I'll take a stab at the trivia question.
Sure.
I will say, unfortunately, $120 million.
Well, that's high, and that is fortunate.
Yeah.
We wouldn't want that.
No, that would
be. Yeah, no, I know we wouldn't, but, you know, the way things have been going, I wouldn't be surprised. All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate the show.
Oh, we appreciate the call. Have a beautiful weekend. Thank you. I used to know why they split it into two, and I cannot remember.
I think it had to do something with the voting rights of the...
Could be.
I don't know the real story, but I believe it had something to do with how the control of the company was structured. So I don't think it matters that much which one you buy.
Remember when Berkshire Hathaway put out the B shares too? Mm-hmm. It's for a little different reason.
That was a totally different reason. Yeah, yeah.
That A share, nobody could afford one A share.
Right,
and they back then you weren't able to do what we can pretty much do now and buy fractional shares pretty much anywhere nowadays. So Buffett put out a B share that I think I owned one once for $1,100, which is a lot different than $160,000.
Yeah, well,
which is now like $300,000.
Yeah, way higher than that today. That's right.
Totally different reasons. There can be reasons for that, and I'm sure a lot of it is controlling interests and voting rights and all that stuff. So that's most likely. Without digging into it right on air, that's pretty much what I would think. All right, but we lost a great American, Lou Conter. Ever heard the name?
No.
102 years old.
Oh, was he the last World War II?
The last one to survive the bombing of the Arizona.
Okay.
And now they're gone. So thank you for what you did. Let's see. Let's talk about another great American, Sammy Fried. Know who he is, don't you?
I do not.
Sammy, he actually has two last names. The current or the crypto criminal, as I call him. Remember Sammy?
Oh, you're talking
the
about
the big one.
SBF.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Bankman-Fried.
Bankman-Fried. If you had said it that way, I would have known.
Well, he got fried. Fried got fried. I thought that was pretty appropriate. 25 years. The prosecution wanted 50, and his lawyers wanted 6 because they figured he could learn a lesson in 6. No. I'll guarantee you he won't learn a lesson in 25.
No.
No. This guy is the most arrogant individual that I have ever seen in my life, and I can't say enough about how happy I am that he got that sentence.
For sure.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
What's happening?
Oh, not much, but like you did say earlier, it's a beautiful day.
Yes, it is.
Yes. I'll take a quick shot at the trivia.
Sure.
All right. I read something recently that said 1.2 million more Americans have been added in the last year, which is unfortunate. And I'm going to go with an overall 47 million.
No, you're still too high.
Still too high.
Yep.
All right. Okay. By the way, that same article said something interesting, and I hope Harvard University is listening. The article mentioned about that poverty is increasing in the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
and they gave some stats. And lastly, they made a point of saying that when it talks to different ethnic groups, when it comes to annual incomes, that the Asian Americans have an average of $109,000. And Black Americans, it's unfortunately 53,000. Mm-hmm. I thought that was an interesting stat.
It is. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and give you the trivia question. I think it might, the way we asked it might have been a little misleading. The number actually is 1.2 million. That's how many people moved down there. But the other answer is how many are there. So you got both numbers right. Subprime, there are 47 million. And Prime is 47% of the country.
47%.
Yep.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that means that 53% aren't prime. And everybody should take the initiative to do this. So
yes.
We're going to call you the winner, and we got to explain a little bit
about
it.
That's very generous of you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Well, I always wonder if I'm being clear enough when I ask the question, because you popped right in. You know, I like a guy who's literate. And I know you read all the time. That's not a bad
thing. I do. That's about that, and try to ward off the homeowners association.
It's a full-time job right there.
Exactly. Have a great weekend, gentlemen. Thank you.
We've got your address, so we won't.
Okay. Thanks. Very good.
Bye. Yeah, 1.2. What's the saddest about that? 47 million in subprime is sad, but the saddest thing is that we're moving more into it, not more out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, like you said earlier, if you're not at 680, figure it out. Good website. Credit Karma, as Adam mentioned. Another one's ClarkHoward.com. He has a very credible record with such things as the FICO scores and background and all that stuff. So try it out. All right, I got a book review. I do one every now and again. We had a request many months ago from a caller, and I read a lot too. Some of them are novels, some of them are a real thing. This is in between. Those of you who follow this kind of thing probably know who Kurt Schlichter is. He is seen on, it's not Red State, it's the other one, Town Hall, I believe. And he has an incredible background that includes military and law and so on. And he's a very enjoyable guy to listen to. But that man can write. He can really write. And I'm insanely jealous, of course. His new book is called Attack. A lot of people have been talking lately about all the people coming in here that we don't know and can't track, and how a lot of them have got to be the type that you don't want around. So the theory is that they're setting up another 9/11 type, only on a broader scale. So Schlichter got involved with that concept, and he wrote Attack as if it happened this coming August. So it's written in the aftermath of what he's saying it for the historical value of it could. He's changing it to it did. And he interviews in the book a bunch of people, of course, all hypothetical, but they talk about their particular experience and what America did about it. And the fascinating thing to me about the book is his description of America's reaction. Basically, we just threw all of the stupid stuff out the door, got back to basics, and we're getting over it. I think if you're any kind of an adventure type reader and you are concerned a little bit for all those things, this is just an astoundingly good book. I can't recommend it high enough. Kurt Schlichter, Attack. He also writes some interesting novels that are totally